Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hej, hej och välkomna till Vinpratarna. Vi är nu i mitten av december och jag har dragit på mig någon slags influensa, vilket är anledningen till att jag kanske låter lite mer täppt och annorlunda än jag brukar. Men skit i det, för idag ska ni få höra en intervju som jag gjorde för någon vecka sedan med ingen mindre än Rajat Par. Rajat Par är ingen mindre än en levande legend vad gäller vin idag. Och du har ju säkert sett honom i diverse tidningsartiklar eller vindokumentärer de senaste åren. Rajat är född och uppvuxen i Calcutta och hamnade så småningom via kockskola i New York som sommelier på Rubicon och sedan som wine director på The Mina Group. Och sedan ett antal år tillbaka är han istället vinmakare i Kalifornien och Oregon, där han gör fantastiskt rena och snygga viner med klart burgundiska förtecken. Kort och gott, en superfascinerande vinperson och som dessutom blivit ökänd för sina ohyggligt grymma blindprovningsförmågor. Så, without further ado som det heter. Varsågoda, jag ger er Rajat Par. Trevlig lyssning.
Welcome Rajat Par to Sweden. And Stockholm and Vinpratarna, the name of the show here.
Of course, thank you.
You're here to present, because your wines, you have started to work with a Swedish importer, right?
Yes.
And you're here to, we just came from a lunch when we tasted Evening Land. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but for starters, I just also want to know a little bit about you. I read somewhere that you actually started to drink wine quite late in life, sort of in your 20s, is that right?
Yes, for sure, because yeah. I was born in India, in Calcutta, and there wasn't much wine around in India, and so the first time I had wine was when I was 20. I was in England.
In England,
yeah. My uncle, that was in 93, and that's the first time I had. I had wine, so I was very intrigued and curious, and because as a child, you eat grapes, and if you don't know, wine is made from grapes. I'm like, wow, this is made from grapes. I was like, that's funny.
Cause yeah.
How can something made from grapes be so profound? So I had wine there for the first time, and.
But you think it was it a good thing or for you that you didn't have these teenage getting drunk on cheap wine experiences, that you started to drink in an early, in a more grown up age, so to speak, that you.
I don't know. I think that I drank enough bad cheap alcohol, so it wasn't
okay.
It wasn't like wine, but. But definitely I was exposed to all these flavors I'd never had before.
No.
Flavors you don't get in whiskey and rum and beer.
No, definitely.
So it was definitely an eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
It was a beverage from grapes. So.
But then you moved to the States. But how? When did you realize that you wanted to start working with wine? Was that?
Yeah. So I was in England, and then I moved to upstate New York to go to culinary school. I wanted to be a chef.
Mm.
So that was my goal in life, mission, that I want to be a chef. So I moved to the culinary school up in Hyde Park, New York, and I started to go through culinary school, and then I tasted wine there, and I was like, wow, this is interesting, because I was still curious, and I joined the wine club, and then we had a wine class, and I was just like, wow, it kept coming back to me that this is a very interesting subject.
Mm.
And then I decided that I wanted to study it more. I finished culinary school, and I did not want to be a chef anymore.
No.
I wanted to study about wine. But in 1996, there were not that many young sommeliers. Like today, there's so many.
Sommeliers are so the many new rock stars.
Yeah, yeah. I was 24, and I was like, oh, so why, you know, what's the, how do you learn about wine? And my instructor said, you can only learn about wine by either going to the place or learning from somebody at some place which has a good wine list. So I moved to San Francisco and took a job in a restaurant which has a very big wine list and had a master sommelier, Larry Stone.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Rubicon.
Yeah, Rubicon, yeah. Yeah. So you learn on the job. And I started as a back waiter, as a food runner, and then slowly became bartender, then waiter, and then assistant sommelier. So, yeah,
that was the trip. And then, but I mean, what did Larry Stone? What has he meant to you when it comes to your wine experience or wine learning?
Oh, Larry is my mentor, and you know, guided me through life. Mm. Not only wine, but taught me about service, about wine, and very patiently, even today, advised me on everything in my life. So he's the most important person in the world for me.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
Yeah, you've earned. You're quite famous for sort of having mastered the art of blind tasting. I mean, people know you're really good at blind tasting. But my question is, did you have a certain learning technique? I mean, to remember how do you store the experiences in your head? How did you learn the blind tasting thing?
When I first tasted wine, I was like, wow, this is interesting. But I didn't know how to explain the flavors because I had never tasted, you know, I never had so many different things like herbs you have in the Western world. I never, you know, I only knew a few things. So I trained myself by smelling different herbs, different fruit, different spices. And I trained my palate by smelling everything.
Yeah.
And then I started to taste the wine, really focus on the wine. And for, I think, almost 5 years, or 5 or 6 years, I tasted every wine blind.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So if I was tasting a wine from you know, a distributor or someone comes to show you the wine, I used to put the glasses out. I said, pour me the wine, and then just leave the glasses.
Mm.
Don't show me the bottle.
Mm.
And so I used to taste them blind. And that way I kind of was training myself through my own palate. So I did that for many years. And then it became like a, you know, also I must say that back in the 90s, wine was not expensive. You could afford a bottle of Latache or a bottle of First Growth Bordeaux. You could buy it.
Mm.
They were expensive, but they were not like what they are today.
Well, right.
And they were available. And so very early on, I was drinking lots of old wine and top producers and really focusing on vintages, flavor profiles, and really kind of focusing. I had many different tasting groups. some with sommeliers, some with collectors, and it was always it was like a passion of mine to classic wine. Why it tastes like classic wine? So you know that was the, you know, it was all about classic wine, and the wine world today has changed a lot. The classical regions. Still, are many are still classical, but in the classical region, there's a lot of people who've producers who are now the new classic. I'm not saying it's there's a different classic wine now. So it's So it's even now it's still interesting to. I still taste many wines blind, and it's always exciting.
But how does it work when you when you taste the wine blind? Do you, nowadays do you immediately get an idea, or do you do the sort of classic that, that you learned at when you're on some of your trainings, that what can it not be? You know, you put away things, or do you have sort of a, like a gut feeling nowadays that you have to be?
It's the same. It's like the Rolodex in your head.
Yeah.
I have a decent memory. Of course, as you get older, you forget more things than you remember. So I try to think back on if I've had the wine or haven't had the wine, and sometimes you can have taste the wine. First time you have the wine, you can, like the other day I had a wine for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never had it before, but I blind tasted it down to producer vintage.
Uh-huh.
But I had had a different wine from the producer, but never that specific wine.
Okay.
But I had had that vintage, and I had had
the producer.
The producer, uh-huh. So. You know, of course, and as you get older, it's no secret you lose the sharpness you are. But the more you practice, the better you get.
Mm.
And I don't practice much anymore. Sometimes in restaurants, someone gives you a wine blind, or sometimes I was at a friend's house and somebody brought up this bottle of champagne. And but back in the day when I was practicing, it was only I was only drinking classic wine.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so, as always, practicing is the key to mastering. Yeah.
It's much harder today because the wine style has changed, and also the wines you drink, and also the prices are quite. You know, it's not like, you know,
it's hard to buy DRC.
Forget DRC. even to buy, older vintage, even a village wine is. Yeah. It's. You have to be rich to drink those classic wines.
Yeah.
Or have good friends.
But then you decided to go into a winemaking career. How and when did that happen?
I was very happy working in restaurants, and then I was tasting one year. It was, I think, maybe 2003, I think. Or 2004, I was drinking some wine with a friend of mine, with other people, and it was a Graillot, Cros Hermitage, and I think it was 89 maybe, and I told my friend who was also a sommelier turned into winemaker, and I asked him, I said, you know, why don't you make wine like this, whole cluster Syrah from Santa Barbara? He said, oh no, it's. It's not possible. You don't get the same ripeness with the. So I was like, okay. So then I started to find. I said, looking around for a vineyard where I can make some Syrah whole cluster, fresh. And so then I found a vineyard and started working with that. And I started working with other winemakers. And I got curious with practicing. Then I met Sashi in the way.
Yeah.
And then slowly it just kind of like became, oh, cool, I could do this. And one day maybe not work in restaurants and have a normal life and sleep at a normal time. So it just started like that. It was just not. And then when I met Sashi, and then we started Sandy.
Your business partner.
Sashi Mormon, my business partner. And Evening Land and Sandi and Dome de la Cote. And so, you know, then at that time he was working and planting vineyards for Evening Land, and I started consulting for Evening Land. And then one thing led to the other, and it was just, And then we had a chance to take over the vineyards at the ones in which are now Domaine de la Côte.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it all just happened. It was not planned. And then and the same owners who owned Domaine de la Côte also at the time owned Evening Land, and then they said, why don't you take over Evening Land? So it all just like happened.
One after another.
Yeah, it was not like I sat down and said, I'm going to plant vineyards and I'm going to... So it was a... And then it was a difficult decision also to leave the restaurants because you're... You know, you open a restaurant, you want to work there, and then you know, it was a difficult choice to make. But but now I'm deep in not only making wine, but deep in debt with the vineyards we have. You know, because we know that we are always, of course, we're indebted to not only the bank but also the vineyard because.
Yeah.
It's a lifetime project to take care of them and make sure they do well for the next generation.
Yeah,
because it's not in one lifetime. It's not enough time to succeed. It must be multi-generational. Yeah.
But you have three projects. You have Sandy, you have Domaine de la Côte, and Evening Land.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what are these three projects?
So the first. Project, of course, the first was Sandy in 2009. It was the first vintage. It's a négociant company where we rent the vineyards and we make the wine in Lompoc.
Mm-hmm.
Domaine de la Côte is our own estate that we acquired, but we also helped in planting in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an estate. Mostly Pinot Noir, a little bit of Chardonnay.
And Sunday, what are the grapes on Sunday?
It's mostly Chardonnay, little bit of Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
So they both are in the same appellation in the Santa Rita Hills, just 1 hour northwest of the town of Santa Barbara, in this little town called Lompoc.
Lompoc.
It's right on the coast, so the Domaine de la Côte, the vineyards are around 8 miles from the ocean.
Yeah.
And the Sandy vineyards are between 8 and 12 miles from the ocean.
Okay.
So the same little piece, and the soils are very interesting, and we try to make, fresh, crunchy wines with lots of acidity and freshness and old traditional methods, using whole cluster for Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Fermenting in concrete.
Indigenous yeast.
No additives. No. Indigenous yeast. Minimum intervention and try to make a wine from the place. And they're quite distinct of that place. And then Evening Land is the newest. We acquired that in 2014. So this is the first release we just released here in Sweden. And that is from this one estate called Seven Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And that estate has many different parcels. So we make 8 different wines, and we make 4 Pinot Noirs, 3 Chardonnays, and 1 Gamay.
Yeah, 1 Gamay as well. That's cool. It's not many Gamays in that area, right?
No. This was definitely the first vineyard Gamay vineyard planted in Oregon.
In the
mid '80s.
Yeah.
So.
We had the 14 for lunch, all we had five wines altogether, two Chardonnays and 3 Pinots. And they were super fresh, super clean, super pure, all of them. But I spoke to Totte, as you also know, and he had tasted the 13, the vintage before you started working. And he said, they're totally different wines, since you took over the place. What is your winemaking philosophy? What is the difference on Evening Land since you took over? What are you doing different?
First of all, we are lucky that the vineyard is special.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we are very honored to work with the vineyard. So, in respect to the vineyard, it's pretty much the same as in the past. It's farmed biodynamically. It's dry farmed and Of course, we have to maintain and keep it that way for forever or as long as we can. And then in the cellar, just make a very, as I said, pure, finesse, low extract, making Pinot Noir with more with infusion, less with extraction. Mm. Again, indigenous yeast, because, you know, and then just keeping our hands off and letting the wine dictate the route. Of course, wine needs to be taken care of. Wine doesn't make themselves. You have to take them on the
path. Steer them in the right direction.
But then also, you know, keeping it, you know, without any manipulation, you know, not filtering or fining or keeping it straight, keeping it with its own acidity. Mm. Picking with freshness, treating it like, you know, just the great fruit it is. And we're lucky also to have a good vintage. 14, 13 was difficult for the previous winemaker. And just more purity and just finesse. That's the goal, to have the wine approachable when you release it. And then hopefully with time it's going to age and show its evolution.
We were talking about blind tasting just a few minutes ago, and what would you say if someone's blind tasting wines that you are behind? What is the sort of the key to recognizing? This must be one of Roger Parr. You have a sort of a signum when it comes to winemaking.
I think in 5 years I can maybe answer that question more accurately. You know, in our wines. You know, we make wines in San Rita Hills, which are all marine sedimentary soils, and it's an ocean-influenced maritime climate. Mm. And the wines, I think, and also the way the vineyards are planted, it's definitely unique to, you know. And then in Oregon, it's volcanic soil, so the wines are more smoky, and they are a little more, the tannin is a little bit more broad. I think when you have our wines, if you drink a Pinot, you know, you can expect to have wines with finesse, but have the spice element because we use some whole cluster. So that's definitely something. And then for the whites, you know, it's, you know, we are inspired and we've learned from producers in Burgundy. So it's in that style. It's always going to be lean and fresh and try to express the minerality of the place, and in one case saltiness and the other case smokiness, and that's a normal from both places. You know, we try not to do too much, but we do what we know. You know what I mean? It's not the imprint of a barrel producer or an imprint of a high extract.
No. The oak treatment felt very light-handed, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Very sort of elegant oak treatment.
We, of course, use barrels, and around 20% is what our normal goal is, but also a low toast, so not too much char.
No.
One thing, our wines, we don't, I mean, they're not flashy.
No.
They are... They have fruit, they have exuberance, but we don't want a flashy wine.
No.
So if you have the wines among other wines, they might not be the most, you know, because if you have a lot of wines, sometimes a wine stands out because of some elements. So...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What would you say if we're talking about West Coast USA wine in general? What are the most interesting things happening in that region right now, according to you?
Lots of things happening in all over the... On the West Coast, starting from Washington State and Oregon, of course, and then all over California, starting from the North Coast, even up in Anderson Valley, or mm-hmm. even going into the Sacramento Delta, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of fun things happening. I think that people are finding where to plant Pinot Noir, where to plant Syrah, where to, of course, Chardonnay and things like that, but also other grape varieties. There's, mm-hmm. Chenin Blanc was a big part of the North Coast, so people, again, are going back to Chenin Blanc.
Yeah, you talked about, you have some Chenin Blanc as well.
Yeah,
In England, right?
We have a little bit in Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And a little bit also in Santa Barbara.
Yeah? So let's talk a little bit about it. What do you do with that? So do you do varietal wine, Chenin Blanc?
Old barrels.
Yeah.
See, all the wines we make, we also make a little bit of Cabernet, very small, a little bit of Merlot.
Yeah.
Some, of course, Syrah and Trousseau.
Trousseau also.
Overarching idea of all these wines we make, many of the wines for the wine club, and we have a small other project with the Stolpmans project called Combe, where we have Chenin and Trousseau. Mm-hmm. And the overarching idea is to, again, stay true to varietal, plant in a place, and, if it's a Trousseau or a Merlot, or if it's a Pays,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
if it's a Chenin, if it's Mondeuse, it should taste like that.
Yeah.
And then, if you're lucky, if you find the right place, and the wine is delicious and drinkable,
yeah.
right? That's the whole idea. It's not to make a Cabernet which tastes like Zinfandel or you want to have the right, So if you smell it smells like pyrazine. If you have a Syrah, it smells like black pepper. If you have the Trousseau, it smells like that wild. So all these things we do, of course, the focus is definitely Pinot Noir, Chardonnay from the Middle of Côte and Seven Springs. But these other things which surround us is just the same curiosity when I travel. I just finished writing a book with my friend Jordan McKay. It'll be out next year, and it's about the classic wines of Europe.
Oh, okay.
So then you travel around, you see these people, and you learn how they do things, and you bring it back home and try it yourself.
But you work a lot, obviously, with Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Mm. What to you is so fascinating with those grapes? I mean, because you also you've sought land because you wanted to do those grapes. I mean, but why? Yeah.
So from 2004 till 2012, 2013, we did many experiments.
Mm-hmm.
This whole cluster, 25%, 50%, 100% in the cellar, how, racking, no racking, sulfur, no sulfur. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I think now that we understood the place, so we are trying, now it's much more classic, so mm-hmm. we don't do that many experiments. We mm-hmm. know that La Côte will be 100% whole cluster, it's in concrete, Navino in Seven Springs, The Lost Horse. You know, we kind of course we vintage. We depend on the whole cluster in Oregon, and so. But we those are very classical wines. Mm-hmm. And then when you so we understood what Oregon wants to be, and what you know Dom de la Côte wants to be, San Fernando de Chardonnay or Mont Carmel or Bentroc. It's like we know that's what. Because we tried different things, and now we know.
Mm.
So stay on path for all those.
And
we have, of course, learned from producers in France, and we are proud to say that because it's and then and the other things we do are more you know one off experimental or if you do a pet nat or if you do you know sans souf and stuff we do like just for fun just on the sides but we make the estate-wise, Dom de la Côte and Evening Land in a classic way.
Yeah, but part of the question was, what do you think is so fascinating with Pinot Noir and Chardonnay as grape varietals? I mean, is it that Pinot Noir is obviously a very tough grape to work with? It's very sensitive and delicate and all that. Is it that part of the thing, or is it just that you like that kind of wine yourself?
Well, if you go back in time. Like, just to go back, when I was working in restaurants and it was difficult in California to have many Chardonnays and Pinot Fresh. They were quite ripe and
heavy-oaked.
Heavy, yeah. Mm. So then we tried to find places where we can make it more in a fresh style.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in the mid-2000s, that was a minority. Now, you see... There's a lot of producers who are making fresh style wine, and there's other producers who are making ripe wine, which is fine because more people drink ripe wine than fresh style wine. But the palate. So our thing with Pinot Noir Chardonnay is definitely more towards the fresh and vibrant, and that's one of the reasons why I think we are successful in the European. Because you know I don't know how many people in Europe who want to drink that kind of wine. Some people may, but we also export wine to France, for example.
I was tasting in
Paris earlier this week, and it's fascinating that you know I'm pouring the wine in Paris among many other producers from all over France, and. You know, they're like, wow, this is California. So it's a proud moment because California can make wine also like that. But the benchmark is still, you know, the heavier wines.
And
that's fine because, you know, everyone has their own palate. But our focus is more on the crunch. Freshness.
Very fresh and very nice acidity and all that. What's in the future for you now and the wineries? I mean, it's just starting to continue to grow or are you thinking of new projects or
no more growth. I think the goal is not to make too much wine, to make just enough wine and take care of the vineyard and you know in one case in Dom de la Côte the vines are young to see them mature and you know, watch them grow, basically. And and in Evening Land, there's some vineyards old, some are young, so there's a lot of replanting happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's not. There's no goal to make more wine, or we are not buying another estate, or nothing. We are quite
sounds
happy.
Sounds like your hands full.
Yeah,
already.
Quite happy with that. Yeah. Those three wineries, just look after them and kind of, you know, maybe not travel this much because also the book will be out next year, so then that'll be.
But you also, this is your second or even third?
Second book.
Second, yeah, because you did The Secrets of the Sommelier was the.
Exactly, yeah. Same, so me and Jordan McKay.
Oh, this is
so exact same. This book is called The Atlas of Taste.
Atlas of Taste, okay.
So why classic wines of Europe taste the way they taste. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to explain that. Throw some geology in there and some other fun things and I think next fall it'll be busy for to release the book. And then again, another new vintage. You make a wine, and then you have release a vintage. The cycle is forever. And that's the fun of it, because, you know, next time when I come back, you'll taste the 15 Domaine de la Côte and Sandy wines, and then the 15 Evening Land, and then, that's it. No more.
But you're done with being a sommelier. I mean, working in a restaurant.
Yeah. I don't work in a restaurant. I still help. I still work with Michael Mina.
You do that. Yeah.
You know, it's. I took a little break for a couple of years, and now again I work with them, and it's fun because it's like family. You know, it's difficult to. And it's also great to, you know, work with restaurants. But I don't work in the restaurant. I just work more by email or phone, or I go a few days.
Yeah.
But I enjoy going to bed early and waking up early. So
yeah, get it. But is there anything else in the wine world you want to do? I mean, you've been a sommelier, you've been writing books, and now you're actually working as a winemaker. Is there any more sort of goals or things on your bucket list when it comes to wine?
You know, I never had a bucket list.
No.
I never had these goals.
No.
These things just came in front and you just kept doing it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing. I have no plans to do anything else.
No.
Hopefully try to live a balanced life. That's a goal, because
that's a challenge in itself.
Nothing else new. I'm just looking forward to releasing the new book. Looking forward to releasing the next vintage and going on with life.
Finally, I saw an interview with you. I don't remember where, but you said something about wine drinking that I felt was kind of relieving. You said there's only two kinds of wine: the good wines and there are bad wines. And if you like them, then it's good. And then if you don't drink it.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's always. Do you think that us? I mean, the sommeliers and the journalists are good enough at making wine understandable and sort of down to earth to consumers today? Or think it's a what's your general opinion on?
First thing, I think that. You know, wine, my good friend Richard Betts says wine is a grocery. Wine is something you drink. We drink it every day with friends, with family. And I think it should not be snobbish. It should not be a pedestal. It should be a natural beverage you drink. And you make it also in a very honest, natural way.
Mm-hmm.
And you present the wine the way it is. I think that there's a lot of, marketing gimmick around wine sometimes. And, of course, wine should have a story because it's made by people who are inspired by people or by a place or something. But I think that we should talk about wine from a place or person.
Mm.
I don't believe in, too much about, this is this clone and this is... This barrel is this score of this wine or this got a medal. And of course, it's great to have accolades in wine. And we need wine writers, wine critics, everything to promote wine. But I think that we should show wine in a way that we, like if you talk to someone, transport the person's mind to the place where the wine comes from.
Mm.
Even though you haven't been to Oregon or you haven't been to wherever, but to... take a person's, that this wine comes from here, or it's made by this person in this place. And then you can geek out as much as you want. Some people just like the taste of it and forget it. Some people want to know more about the detail. I think that it should be, first of all, it should be
fun.
Fun and also not too snobby, not too I only drink fine wine in my suit and tie. because that's the old-fashioned way of it's fine, but I think that just to understand your own palate, keep your mind open and taste different things. And, if you drink the same wine every single day, how boring is that?
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and have a nice rest of your stay in Stockholm. Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'm sure I'll be back very soon.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Thank you. See you around.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.